I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
What have you been up to?
I have put some of my 90 tomato plants outside, hoping that some of them die at least so I can get rid of some of them, and they're all surviving, which is horrendous. I'm gonna have like my balcony is gonna be like overrun with like vines of tomatoes. There's gonna be like no space to actually go out there and sit, you know.
It will smell amazing.
It will, and I mean I'll eat them all, but that's not the point. Yeah, and the usual sort of podcasts and stuff like that. I listened to a podcast called Swindled. I don't know if you've listened to it.
Not listened to it yet.
It's so good. I just really enjoy it. It's great. Also, I said before, Small Town Dicks, really enjoying that. Yardley Smith has such a nice voice to listen to. Like, she has a perfect voice for podcasting. Mm-hmm. Like, she's such a pleasure to listen to. Also, one that I'm really enjoying, I've probably mentioned it before, but Nightlight Podcast.
Yeah.
That's the one with, like, the horror movie.
Yeah, that sounds
Yeah, cool. Really enjoy that. That is really good. I've just kind of been catching up with them, to be honest. Finished Chasing Charlie. That was good.
I've listened to 2 episodes of that.
Yeah, so I think there's only 6 episodes. I'm hoping that they'll bring out like an update episode or whatever, but I think that's pretty much it done now. But yeah, it was great. Really enjoyed it.
I was listening to Big Mad True Crime. Have you listened to it?
No.
So I'm only on, I think, episode 4. So she starts off as a presumed American woman called Heather. And I just really like her style because she really reminds me of how I get so frustrated at like criminals, or I get really frustrated at cases. So like the whole premise is that she gets big mad at true crime, and then the first however many episodes are covering the Chris Watts, Shanann Watts case. And yeah, I just love the way that she goes through it and like breaks it down, you know, when he's lying about stuff and she's like, really you can't think of anything better, you know, like she's just really funny the way that she comes to, and it's the kind of things that you and I think when we're listening or watching someone and you're like, well, that's weird because before you said such and such, you know what I mean? There's like a bit of sassiness in it. I love it. So yeah, I've been really enjoying that. And also I found that case really fascinating anyway, just the whole Instagram, Facebook perfect life, but behind the scenes there's all this other stuff going on, and you know, he was lying to his mistress, and just I find family annihilators really interesting, but especially the ones that try and do it and not, they don't try and take themselves out with them. They just think they can like sail off into the sunset. They're so arrogant and so misguided.
Narcissistic.
Yeah, they just think, oh no, this is totally cool. The fact that, spoiler alert for anyone that doesn't know the story, but the fact that he had to push the bodies of his 2 daughters into the oil drums, like, and they were only 8 inches across. He basically had to force them in. And he could do that. And then he was blaming it all on her, saying that she lost her mind and she smothered them both, so he had to kill her. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
An asshole.
Her take on it is pretty much exactly where my mind goes.
I don't think I've heard of this case.
Okay, so Chris Watts, essentially, Shanann Watts was, I think she was 12, oh, maybe 15 weeks pregnant. And they had 2 young girls. And they were really, both really attractive, you know, lovely house, blah, blah, blah. She ran quite a successful business. I think it was a multi-level marketing type thing, but she was, you know, a consultant of some sort. And she came back from a business trip and he basically reported her and the girls missing. And it turns out he was having an affair the whole time and there was money issues and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, he either smothered or strangled all 3 of them. Then I think he was worked in engineering and contract work. He drove out into this place in the middle of nowhere, dumped the 2 girls inside separate oil canister things, like big drums, and buried the wife. And then he did a plea on TV. He was still texting the mistress. He went and stayed with friends of theirs that night and was crying to them. And like afterwards, they obviously said, you know, we never in a million years thought that this could happen. They were totally shocked because they were trying to support him and look after him. And interestingly enough, Shanann's mother from the get-go was like, don't trust him, he's done something. And even though they'd had a good relationship, and even in the first days of like the search, they had a good back and forth as well, she just had this intuition. She was like, nope, don't
trust him. Women's intuition.
And yeah, it's really harrowing. I would recommend it because even, I think it was a few weeks before, she did a Facebook surprise video to reveal that she was pregnant. And it was posted on Facebook, and it's, you know, her, I think there was a t-shirt, you know, that kind of thing. You would never, ever have seen it coming. It's that Facebook friend that you've got who just seems to have got it all right. The handsome husband, the house, the everything, the kids, the success, the
picture perfect life.
Exactly. And then it all falls apart. So yeah, that's the first case she covers, and she does it in several episodes, and then it looks like she moves on to other cases as well. So
I maybe give that a listen then.
Yeah. Although she wouldn't like hers, because at the start of it, she's like, you know how I feel about small talk? Let's just get to it. she would not enjoy her podcast, I don't think.
Speaking of which, what case have you got for us this week?
So this case is one that is particularly topical right now. It's kind of been brought back to the forefront of particularly the Scottish media's minds because of the recent death of George Floyd in police custody. Because it has a lot of parallels to that case. It happened in Kirkcaldy in Scotland, and it's about the death of Sheku Bio. I don't know if you're super familiar with it. I had heard of it on and off, but I didn't really know the full details of the case. And obviously, having done the research, I feel a lot better informed now to kind of talk about it. Have you heard much of it?
Yeah, name rings a bell, but I can't remember the details.
That's cool. Well, we'll get to it. On the 3rd of May 2015, 31-year-old Sheku Bio died in police custody in Kirkcaldy, Fife, in Scotland. He was the father of two who was born in Sierra Leone, and he moved to the UK as a teenager. He was training to be a gas engineer, and he lived in Kirkcaldy with his common law wife or partner, Colette Bell. And this will become fairly relevant later. He didn't have a criminal record at the time of his death. He'd had no interaction with the police that is known of. So Sheku Bio's death has been surrounded by a lot of controversy, and it has been subject to review by the Police Independent Review Commission. At present, there has been a further inquiry opened. As such, I'm just going to state the facts as they stand in June 2020. So whenever you listen to this, if it's further on, things may have changed, there may be more information out, but that's all that I have available to me at the time. On the morning of the 3rd of May 2015, so it was in the wee hours of the morning, he went to his friend's house to watch a boxing match. And while he was there, he took the drugs ecstasy and flaca, which is sometimes known as the zombie drug. He became erratic and confused, so one of his friends escorted him home. And then later that morning, around 7 a.m, several members of the public called 999 to report a large black male behaving oddly, brandishing a knife or machete, running towards cars and walking around the roads, appearing to be under the influence of either drugs or alcohol. He was kind of on and around a roundabout as well. And even though it was quite quiet that morning, there were reports that he was kind of staggering towards different vehicles and generally just making people feel a little bit concerned. Around about 7:30 a.m, a police van arrived. It was also followed up by different police cars. It's been stated at this point that Sheku did not have a knife on his person, although a knife was later found nearby. It was also clarified that it wasn't a machete, it was a blade, a smaller blade taken from a kitchen. The officers also stated that when they arrived, they believed that he may have hidden the knife on his person. I think it's fair to point out they weren't sure where the knife was. Within 40 seconds of arriving, four officers had advanced on and either sprayed Sheku with irritant sprays directly into his face or used their batons on him. He had not advanced towards them or attacked them in any way at that point. There is some conflicting evidence as to what happens next. One of the officers, a 5'1" female officer, is struck and falls to the ground. Statements from the officers who are with her suggest that they believe Sheku then stamped on her back in an unprovoked attack. Sheku is then brought to the ground and handcuffs and leg restraints are applied to him. Up to 6 officers are restraining Sheku at this time, and around 9 officers are on the scene. Within 3 minutes of him being restrained, he falls unconscious. An ambulance is called, however, Sheku is pronounced dead at the local hospital 90 minutes after the altercation began. In 2018, it was announced that no action was to be taken against any of the officers on scene that day. Sheku's family have always felt strongly that he would not have died that day if he hadn't encountered the police. The post-mortem showed 25 separate injuries to the body, including head injuries consistent with being hit with a baton and petrichiae on his eyes, which suggest asphyxia. The official cause of death on his death certificate was sudden death due to drug intoxication whilst being restrained. However, Sheku's family employed a pathologist, and their pathologist determined that the most likely cause of death from the information on the postmortem would be positional asphyxia due to improper restraint and force being used by the police officers that day.
I've heard of this positional asphyxia. Funnily enough, it's come up following the death of George Floyd. I've heard a little bit of talk about it. I was just wondering if there's any details about how they'd restrained him, i.e. how his legs and hands were positioned. Yeah, there's some details about that.
There are more details available, yeah.
Brilliant.
Not all of them have been released to the public, but I'll give you a bit more information in a second. There's a BBC documentary series called Disclosure. I've seen some of them before. So series 1, episode 3 is titled Dead in Police Custody. It's currently available on the BBC iPlayer, and it was originally aired on the 17th of December 2018. It's really, really interesting. It's only half an hour long, but it goes into quite good detail, and it actually released evidence that wasn't available to the public before. So there's CCTV in there that the public hadn't been able to see. There's also videos from eyewitnesses that were shown, and they consulted specialists and experts as well. So it's really quite interesting. The exam and the police officer's statements, which obviously are not available to the public either, and the CCTV footage of the incident, one of which it's not that clear, unfortunately, it's a little bit blurry, but you can still make out the figures quite clearly and kind of see what's going on. You just can't make out facial features, but considering he was the only black person there, it's not that difficult to discern who's who. The first thing that becomes quite clear is that the alleged attack on the female officer is inconsistent with the officer's statement. You can clearly see the officer falling to the ground. However, almost immediately, Sheku is brought to the ground himself. And whilst the footage is blurry, he doesn't appear to strike or stand, to stomp on her, to have any other interaction with her. What it looks like to me as a layperson, and also to the experts that were looking at it, is that he probably pushes her and she falls, and then he's restrained. So that's clearly at odds with the statements given by the police on that day. There's a specialist who trains police forces in the use of appropriate force. His name is Eric Baskind. He's from Liverpool John Moores University. So he points out that in the footage, one of the officers, and this is footage that was filmed by a bystander, it looks like it's out of their window, and it's a bit closer, you've got, you know, a good, pretty good view here. One of the officers seems to be laying directly across Sheku's back when he's lying face down on the ground. So Mr. Baskind states that this will restrict breathing, and it's very dangerous because it can lead to positional asphyxia. Several media reports state that bystanders claimed to hear him screaming and stating that he couldn't breathe and asking them to get off him. This obviously can't be verified, but you can clearly see why people are.
That's pretty devastating given recent events. When did this happen?
2015. Two of the officer statements raised concerns specifically for me, having listened to them being read out as part of this documentary. The female officer, the one that was either pushed or fell, you know, the attack happened to, described Sheku as the biggest male she had ever seen and that she thought that he was going to murder her. So Sheku was 5'10" and 12 stone 10 pounds, reportedly. Two of the male officers on scene were 6'4". There was another male roughly the same height as Sheku, but one of the male officers on scene, one of the 6'4" officers, weighed 25 stone, almost double what Sheku weighed. Both the female officer and one of the other officers described him as this huge, imposing, massive man. And it's almost felt like it was to villainize him and kind of to perpetuate that stereotype. So that really struck me as quite telling. And I'm afraid the next part is going to completely infuriate you, the same as it did me. Both the female officer and another officer stated that they were concerned that this may be a terrorist attack due to the attack on Lee Rigby in London in May 2013. This was 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning on a quiet street in Kirkcaldy, not really a hub of activity for carrying out a terrorist attack, I wouldn't argue. The female officer states that it was because he was a black male and may therefore be Muslim. None of the officers present are known to have radioed in to advise of their concerns that the incident was terrorist related, which the expert Eric Baskin stated that that's what they should have done if that's what they really believed to be the case.
I just don't even know where to start with that.
Yeah.
7 a.m. on a Sunday morning in Kirkcaldy. And they claim that the reason they acted with such force is because they thought it might be a terrorist attack.
It's funny because the way that they actually put it is they say, I think it's the female officer says, oh, I had it in the back of my mind that this could be another terrorist attack. Just to note, he hadn't attacked anyone. He hadn't threatened anyone. He hadn't behaved violently towards anyone. He hadn't even behaved violently towards the police until they pepper sprayed him in the face and hit him with batons, four of them on one person, who was intoxicated, possibly on things he'd never had before. You know, some of his friends have said, you know, we've known him to use recreational drugs, but we've never seen him behave like that. He was probably really, really confused. Was it smart of him to take those things? No, but that's not reason to be attacked by four police people completely unprovoked. For me, that just, the fact that it really does just imply that they saw him as an aggressive, imposing, big black man, and that was it. They decided they were going to go in and use the force that they felt that was appropriate and clearly was utterly inappropriate.
That's it in a nutshell.
It's horrendous. Luckily, Sheku's family have an amazing lawyer who has worked on issues of racial prejudice previously. His name's Amar Anwar. I was reading a lot of stuff that he's just written and done before, and he's on the programme as well. So I really do recommend that. The documentary covers a lot of things that I think it sums up really succinctly as well. So Sheku's family and the lawyer do firmly believe that because Sheku was black, that definitely played into the way that events unfolded and that his death could have been avoided. After much pressure from the media, from the family, I believe there was different marches and petitions and so on and so forth, it was announced in November 2019 that a public inquiry would be launched into Sheku's death. I've got a quote from Amar Anwar. He wrote in an online magazine publication called the Scottish Left Review. It's a political publication. Quote, Sheku was restrained and brought to the ground by several officers within 42 seconds of their arrival. Some officers stated they believed they were under terrorist attack. Sheku had over 50 injuries in total. The police post-mortem found no conclusive cause of death, which is common in deaths in police custody. When so many non-lethal weapons are used, it is not possible to identify which caused the fatal blow. The family's pathologist concluded Sheku died of positional asphyxiation caused by extreme force, more common in black deaths in police custody, justified by a racist stereotype of the black man possessing superhuman strength, which has existed since slavery. This is how Sheku was portrayed by the Scottish Police Federation lawyer Peter Watson when he told the media that a petite female police officer was subjected to a violent and unprovoked attack by a very large man who punched, kicked, and stamped on her, unquote. There have also been reports in the media that one of the officers involved that day had previously carried out a prolonged violent attack on his own elderly parents in their own home, and has publicly stated to several people that he, quote, hates black people.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah.
Obviously he was still a serving police officer.
Yep. And no action has been taken against any of the police officers. It should be noted that when I was looking into this, the female police officer has since kind of outed herself in the media because she's said that she felt she had to leave the police force because she was traumatised, and also claims that he kicked her the full way across the road, which does not support what the CCTV would appear to show. Make up your mind on that as you will. I've formed my own opinions. The remit of that inquiry that is going to be undertaking the public inquiry into Sheikh's death, they announced what it was going to cover. I think it was the 21st of May 2020. It will look at the circumstances before he died in 2015, after being restrained by officers in Kirkcaldy, and the subsequent investigation. Justice Secretary Hamza Youssef said it would also examine if Mr. Bio's actual or perceived race had played any part in events. The family sued Police Scotland for unlawful death, and I think it's a 1.85 million civil claim, but it's been temporarily halted pending the inquiry.
Inquiry's still ongoing.
The inquiry doesn't seem to have started yet because of the COVID crisis. I can absolutely see why people have drawn parallels with the George Floyd case. There was a statistic quoted in the documentary that said something along the lines of 50% of deaths in police custody in the UK are of black people, which I found really horrifying. And I think, honestly, you want to believe these things don't happen so close to home. But they do. And it's devastating that that was 5 years ago and we're still seeing these things happening on a much bigger scale in other countries in the world that are meant to be the most progressive nations in the world. It's horrendous. So in my mind, whether they meant to or they didn't use the correct force, they didn't use the correct techniques, they more or less attacked a vulnerable person and then caused his death because they were frightened, and possibly they were frightened because of a racial stereotype.
Yeah, absolutely sounds like it. And they had a serving police officer who was openly racist as well.
I would be interested to know if he was the one that laid across his back.
Hopefully it wasn't the 6'4", 25 stone guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you literally would not be able to breathe.
No, I mean, you think about it, like, you know, even as kids, when you're sort of wrestling and playing with your friends or your brothers, sisters, whatever, if, you know, even if you did one of those things, like you'd a pile up, you know, and whoever was on the bottom, you couldn't breathe.
You get panicky really quickly.
Yeah, you panic.
It's a horrible feeling.
Absolutely, you can't breathe properly. So I can completely understand that if somebody's been restrained, you know, it's probably quite distressing anyway to be sort of tackled to the ground, say, and restrained. That must be quite, you know, anxiety inducing. So, you know, you're not going to be relaxed. You're not going to be chill. Then if somebody puts their weight across you, especially if that, you know, if that's across your back, you know, and your chest is pressing into the ground or whatever, I'd imagine if you're struggling already, you're probably going to be a bit short of breath. And then having that extra weight and pressure put on you, it doesn't seem safe to me.
Also, his nervous system would have been under stress. You know, he's got ecstasy and flak in his system. Yeah, your normal physiological responses wouldn't be the same.
That's true. What's flak?
Flakka. So it's F-L-A-K-K-A is the street name for it. It has I was going to try and pronounce a medical name for it, but it's like 25 syllables long and mostly consonants. Let me try. alpha pyrrolidinopentiophenone. It's a synthetic stimulant. It was actually originally a legal high, but it's compared to cocaine, but it's considered really dangerous. There's some stories in the US of a young man who took it and cannibalized someone. They call it the zombie drug, and it can create psychosis. It can create really dangerous effects, really serious effects on the user. It can make them be incredibly violent and do things that they never would normally. So yeah, that's flaca.
As can be the case with many drugs.
Absolutely. And you don't know how your body is going to react to them. Everyone can react differently to any kind of drug.
I listened to a podcast recently, and it was a boy who seemed to be a sort of your average Joe kind of guy, you know, easygoing, wouldn't really harm anybody. And he smoked weed and took LSD, and he ended up shooting a bunch of people and killing one. And the thing is that I actually listened to his interview, it was actually quite heartbreaking, because he couldn't believe what he had done, and he took full responsibility for it, but he was devastated because he'd never taken those two drugs together. He didn't know what the outcome would be, and it was just catastrophic.
I mean, this guy just wanted to go and watch the boxing, relax, have a bit of recreational fun. I cannot imagine that he ever expected that to be the outcome. And actually, considering how violent flaca can make people, the fact that all he did was push someone, and he pushed the smallest person there. He didn't try, you know, go in all guns blazing. And from some of the sources, he'd thrown away the knife in someone's garden sometime before they even arrived. So he wasn't walking about brandishing the knife. And there's a lot of mistruths that were circulated after it happened. You know, it was fed to the media that a police officer had been stabbed by him. That didn't happen. When they went to his family to tell them that he'd passed away, they were given different versions of events as well. And one of them, they actually said that they found him unresponsive on the ground, and they were looking for two assailants who'd done that to him, which clearly is not what happened at all. And that was a police officer stated that to the family. So they really feel like they've been pushed from pillar to post. It's not been looked into correctly. When that first review is carried out, they honestly believe justice would be done, and that it would be properly looked into, and that there would be some sort of retribution, or, you know, some reason, some answer to what actually happens on that day. And it's really disappointing and disheartening that it's had to take an independent BBC documentary, who've had to go and hire their own experts, you know, assess the evidence for themselves, and a whole load of pressure from the public, just for them to finally open an inquiry. You know, the fact that it's needed such outrage instead of just doing the right thing in the first place, or holding your hands up and saying we made a mistake. Yeah, I've just been so frustrated by this case.
It's a sort of common response, isn't it? It feels like it's a rare occasion when somebody says, I'm sorry, I did wrong, I'll face the consequences for what I did. You know, when you own your wrongdoings and you face the consequences of that, you know, people are forgiven. But if you stick to your guns and double down on that dishonesty, I mean, that's not the spirit of what the police are all about.
Yeah, and it completely erodes public trust in them. From my point of view, I just have a vision in my head, rightly or wrongly, that, you know, if someone called up just saying there is a man who seems to be on something, wandering about in the street, brandishing a knife, and they didn't state his race, there would have been no preconceived notions. They may have gone in softer. They may have gone in trying not to escalate the situation. I mean, you've got someone who's on some pretty strong stimulants. You don't want to wind them up. You don't want to make it worse. You want to calm them down. You want to get them to a hospital, somewhere where they can get the stuff out. He hadn't done anything wrong.
Also, it's important to point out that that is the purpose of the police. They're there to de-escalate, not escalate.
And they went in all guns blazing.
Really, really poor.
Yeah. Very, very disappointing. What I would say is when I was looking into this, I found a full list of killings by law enforcement in the UK on Wikipedia. It made for a really interesting read if it's something that anyone is interested in doing more investigation on, especially in the light of some of the police brutality protests all around the world. That'll be listed in our show notes and you can find that on Wikipedia and fall down one of the many unfortunate, sad rabbit holes there are to fall down. So that was my case.
That was really, really interesting. Thank you for that. Would you like me to cheer you up with a true crime fact?
Yes, please. Very much so.
All right. Okay. So, Emma, did you know glitter is so unique that it can be effectively used as forensic evidence? Because there are thousands of different types of commercial glitters, any glitter particles found on a suspect can be compelling evidence that they were at a crime scene where an identical glitter particle was found.
That is amazing.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would not have thought that that was a thing.
No, never. Absolutely not. That's awesome. I love that. I like that you could effectively like nail your attacker by having glitter on your body somewhere.
Yeah, because I mean, let's be honest, when you get a birthday card or something that has glitter on, or a Christmas card that's glitter on, you're wearing that for like a week.
You're finding it for months.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, you'd be talking to somebody, they go, you got a speck of glitter on your face, and you're like, well, where the hell did that come from?
The 90s would have been a nightmare. Do you remember the glitter hairspray? Can you imagine? Everyone you came into contact with be a suspect.
I love glitter hairspray. If I could get away with wearing it now, I would.
You absolutely can. You definitely can. There's no rules, especially in lockdown. Make it your quirky quarantine chic look.
Also, I think in Brighton, kind of anything goes.
Oh, definitely. Some of my friends like glitter as much as I do, so I reckon they would be able to nail their killers that way. So if anything unfortunate happens to them, that'll be the first thing I suggest to the police. Did you know, Mr. Police Officer?
We would love to hear from you. If you have a case you would like us to consider covering, you can contact us by email. Our email address is info@murdershespoke.net. You can also find us on Facebook by searching Murder She Spoke, Twitter @MSS_pod. Our Insta handle is Murder She Spoke Pod. If you've enjoyed listening, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.